All right, let's get it on. Welcome to a special hour, a special edition of The Restaurant Show. I'm your host, Mike Boyle. We're going to talk about, for the next hour, some of my favorite things. We're going to talk about ice cold beer. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite companies, Coors Brewing Company. They've been making it for 150 years out in Golden, Colorado. And who better to talk about it than my buddy Pete Coors? And yeah, he is. He's a friend. Pete and I have been friends for years. He's the former chairman and CEO of the Molson Coors Beverage Company. He's retired now, words I thought I would never, ever say. I love the guy for his business acumen, the work ethic, the traditional family values, the contributions outside of the beer industry. Let's talk to him. Let's go ahead and bring him right on. Pete, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Mike, it's great to be with you, and thanks for all those flattering words.
Well, you know what? And you've been making a wonderful product, and I think that you know, a lot of times, Pete, we all get caught up in the new, hot, hip, trendy, that type of stuff. But I think that when businesses, longevity is a sign of success. Your great-grandfather, I've got that right, don't I? Your great-grandfather was in...
Adolf.
Yes, was in Germany and decided at 15 years old. You know what? For my listeners, Pete, we've all had 15-year-olds, and I'm not sure that they would be prepared to leave home, make their way to the coast, stow away on a ship, and arrive in the new world in New York with 17 cents in their pocket and convince the immigration authorities to let them stay. I'm not sure that that's a story you'd hear a lot about today.
Well, actually, I think he was 18, but 15 sounds a little more romantic.
Well, we're not, yeah. Pete, we're not slaves to accurate information when I tell a story, so that's...
I think he'd been apprenticed three times. His father died when he was 10, and just to survive, he served an indenture ship as first as a flour miller, which was his dad's trade. Then that was, you know, at 10 years old, that was probably heavy duty. Yeah. And then as a printer bookbinder, and then 3 years as a brewer. And when he decided to leave Germany and come to the U.S., it was a huge step. He had no money, he had no passport, didn't pay his passage. He was a stowaway, and when he came to this country, as you say, he was able to convince the harbor master to let him work off his passage, and they say the rest is history.
We're talking with Pete Coors from the Coors Brewing Company, and you know what? I just think it's an absolutely wonderful, wonderful story. How did he get... I'll tell you what. Let's do this. We've set the tone for the show, and listeners, we're going to take you through the history, 150 years. We're going to take you through Prohibition. That's a little bit of a challenge. We're going to take you through the discovery of the aluminum can. We're going to take you into the new craft beer era. We're going to do all of that with Pete Coors. And so let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a little blow, Pete, and we'll be right back. Listeners, Benjamin Franklin said, beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. All right, we're going to be right back on the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show. All right, moving on with Pete Coors, chairman, former chairman and CEO of the Molson Coors Beverage Company. Pete, I was a little surprised to hear you retired. I thought that you would go to your grave over at the brewery or out in one of the little taverns out in Pueblo or Gunnison, some of the places we stopped in and ride the Rockies, changing a keg. You're retired now.
Yeah, I think everything in its time. I'm still on the board and enjoying that with son David at the moment, who's the vice chairman now. Watching the next generation. But I'm, you know, fourth generation. He's fifth generation. We got a whole slew of them coming up, sixth generation, and actually there's a seventh generation on the planet now. So who knows what the future will bring? But it was time for me to kind of back off and. I'm not totally backed off. I'm just not getting paid for what I do now.
Well, that makes you and Marilyn great grandparents, Pete.
Yeah, well, no, not our line, but another line. But yeah, we've got a junior at Notre Dame and grandson, and he'll be working for the company this summer. It's kind of fun to watch. It's all take place.
Well, and you know what? That's always interesting, because I remember that part of the maturation process, if you are going to be a member of the Coors family and if you're going to go into the brewery business, you start with a lot of the menial jobs and just kind of work your way up, whether it's giving tours, whether it's cleaning the vats. You have to learn it all if you're going to work at the Coors Brewing Company.
Yeah, Mike, I always laugh because I did literally start at the bottom. With a degree in engineering and an MBA, my dad said it's time for you to go to work, and my first job was 2 months in the waste treatment plant, treating wastewater from the brewery. I think what the message was, and I think it's a good one, that every single job's important. Doesn't matter whether you're sweeping up or cleaning the sewers or working on a bottle line or an accountant or whatever it is, every job's important. And that's kind of the way we've been able to survive 150 years.
And it's probably why you've had employees with you for years and years and years. And I think that's a testimony to you as an employer. So your great-grandfather, Adolph Coors, is in New York, and now all of a sudden he finds himself in Golden, Colorado. Can you take us through that travel, through that time a little bit? I mean, we're talking 1870, 1873 when the brewery opened. That's the Wild West, Pete. How did that work out?
Yeah, he just worked his way across the country. He stopped for a while in Naperville, Illinois, at the Stenger Brewery, and became the general manager. And I think Mr. Stenger had designs on him to marry one of his daughters. And I think what happened is he just decided that he didn't want to get tied down in Naperville, Illinois. Came to, we don't know actually why he left Stenger, but ends up in Denver and doing some work importing wines, casks of wine from California, and taking them by pack horse up to the mountains, Central City and Black Hawk, to the miners. And had a bunch of buddies and German buddies in Denver that said, "Hey, you know how to brew beer. Why don't you start a brewery?" And so on 11 acres of land with a partner by the name of Jacob Schuler, they built a little, what we would today call a craft brewery.
How did he decide on Golden? Was it the Rocky Mountain spring water? Was that one of those aha moments?
As he traveled through Golden on his way up to the mountains, he noticed that there was a good supply of excellent brewing water. Mm-hmm. He'd been trained in brewing, so he understood the science of water, and decided that'd be a great place to build a brewery. So abundant water supply and 11 acres available. It was a tannery originally, and plotted down a little tiny brewery.
All right, we're talking with Pete Coors, the Coors Brewing Company. Pete, you know, you talk about running up to the mountains. Back when Coors was really getting going, they were only in 11 states. And we're going to talk about going national. But how many stories have you heard over the years about people getting their beer in the other states that were not serviced by Coors? Now, I can tell you that when I was getting my MBA at the University of Hawaii, and my dad, growing up in Southern California, we were Coors people. And I can tell you that when he would come to visit me, he would get a case of cans, and they'd be in the low-cut box, and he'd wrap it with twine, and he'd put a handle on it, and he called that my school briefcase, and he would fly over to Hawaii and bring me a case of Coors. You've probably heard a few of those stories over the years, haven't you?
Yeah, that whole bootlegging story would take a whole session. It was really, really interesting that, you know, originally beer was very localized. Brewers owned their own establishments, and that's how you sold beer. There's several towns in the West here that have the Coors Block signature over the building, because Adolph needed to buy the establishment so he could sell his beer.
You
and
bet.
That all changed with Prohibition.
Yeah, Gray's Tavern down in Pueblo, one of your favorites, and you know what? even when I drink one of those ice-cold schooners down there, Pete, I almost feel guilty because I've heard my buddy Pete say, you don't want the beer to be too cold because, but those schooners down there at Gray's, that's probably one of the places that somewhere along the line was owned by the Coors family.
I'm not sure if that one was or not, but, you know, after Prohibition, brewers were not allowed to own retail establishments any longer. And so I suspect that's when the Grays took over that operation. And I love to stop down there. I just don't get to do it often enough.
Have yourself a slopper. All right, we're going to continue on, but let's do this, Pete. Let's take a little brief break. And when we come back, you've led us right into Prohibition. Obviously, businesses, if you're going to be around for any time at all, you're going to face some challenges. That was a big one. Let's talk about it with Pete Coors when we come back on The Restaurant Show. All right, welcome back. We are talking with Pete Coors, a special hour edition celebrating 150 years of the Coors Brewing Company. 1873, yes, indeedy. They just had a big celebration out in Golden. They shut the town down. They had bands and they had street parties, and that was a big deal, Pete. It was a lot of fun.
That was amazing fun. We had obviously a lot of local friends, but we had distributors from all over the country who came in. You know, retailers, customers. It was quite an event, and I'm not sure when the last time they shut down Main Street or Washington Avenue in Golden, except for Buffalo Bills Day Parade.
Yeah, you know, I have to tell you, speaking of the distributors, before we get into Prohibition, in 1989, my daughter Kaylee, who you know, Pete, was born. And in 1990, I said, I'm going to do something for the Rocky Mountain Heart Fund for Children. It's an organization that supports children with congenital heart disease. And obviously, in 1990, we hadn't made nearly the progress that we have made today. And so I said I was going to ride my bike around the state. And the governor saw me off from the state capitol. And this is pre-cell phone. I was going to go down to just south of Walsenburg. I was going to go over to Durango. And then I was going to go up. And I was going to make a square. I was going to do 1,200 miles in 20 days and see if I could raise $25,000 back then for the unit out at Children's Hospital. And the Coors Brewing folks immediately said, will help. And everywhere I went, when I'd get done riding my bike for the day, because I didn't have any support car or anything, they would meet me, they'd pick me up, they'd take me out for a meal, take me out for a few burgers, maybe a couple of beers. Yeah, I earned a couple of beers when you're doing 60 miles a day. Pete, you and I have done that. You know what that's like. And your distributorship network, that's how I got. Of course, I knew a lot of the people from CDC, Ed Peterson and Mark DiGiorgio and those guys back in the early 80s. But your distributorship network is really a wonderful bunch of people.
Well, after Prohibition, we were required to sell through a wholesaler, and we could not go direct to retail. So we have, you know, and our competitors as well established wholesalers all over our market at that time, and as well as all over the country. And they just play a critical role in supporting our brands and supporting the communities in which they operate. It's nice to hear you tell the story about the support you had and what some people would think is just kind of a routine deal. It was a pretty extraordinary trip around the state.
Well, then one of the things that I talk about too, when somebody says, you know, I don't want to go to a chain restaurant, I don't even know what that is. I mean, so if you go to a Chick-fil-A, they're locally owned and operated. They're the people on the ground. It can be a McDonald's, it can be a Whataburger, whatever it happens to be, but they're locally owned and operated. And they're supporting the local high school. They're supporting the local Kiwanis Club. And that's what those distributors do. They are the face of the Coors Brewing Company out in the communities that they live in and participate in. I've found all of them to just be wonderful, wonderful people over the years. Pete, let's talk a little bit about Prohibition, because 1873, we've been around for 45, 50 years. 1920, I believe, was when Prohibition came in, a big temperance movement. It swept the country. That's got to be a pretty big challenge. Talk about how Coors addressed that.
Well, actually Colorado had Prohibition, and the state had Prohibition prior to the 18th Amendment to the Constitution, which made Prohibition nationwide.
You mean you couldn't drink here before Prohibition?
No, exactly. Well,
glad I wasn't around.
You weren't supposed to, I think, is the
proper way to
operating
say.
Work.
Yeah.
Prohibition came on, and it wasn't illegal to make alcohol. It was illegal to transport it or sell it. So, you hear a lot about bathtub gin. A lot of people tried to make alcohol and poison themselves. But we shut down. We had the malting operation, so we were able to make. And there were a lot of dairies between Golden and Denver. We the Robinson Dairy and others, and they'd bring us their milk, and we'd take ground malt and evaporate it and make malted milk, which helped us survive. We had a little porcelain company called Coors Porcelain Company here in Golden that my great-grandfather and some of the city fathers had acquired, and he ended up owning 100%. But it just basically all it did was to provide some jobs. And Prohibition was a very, very tough time for anybody in the alcohol beverage industry.
Well, so it helped not only you survive, but it helped continued to give employment to so many of the people that depended on you. So speaking of contributions, did I understand that the Coors Brewing Company built the wastewater system or the sewer system for the entire city of Golden at one point?
Yeah, well, in 1952 or 3, the Clean Water Act was passed.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, everybody, prior to that, all wastewater went straight into Clear Creek, which goes by Golden.
Mm-hmm.
And all, wastewater from Idaho Springs and the mining towns, Blackhawk and Central City, all came, everything, they just flushed their toilets, everything went straight down Clear Creek. So in 1953, the company and the city were faced with having to treat our wastewater, and my Uncle Bill Coors and Father Joe said, well, we don't want to be dependent upon the city, and they need our land to build a wastewater treatment plant, so we'll build it, and we'll treat the city of Golden's wastewater, I guess the rest of that is history.
Yeah,
we're still treating them.
Well, and one of the other things that you do, I know you're very proud of the recycling efforts that you have at the Coors Brewing Company. Cardboard comes to mind. You and I were talking one time, and you're one of the largest recyclers of cardboard in the state or the country or the world or something, but you do a lot of recycling.
Recycling of the paper, recycling of glass bottles, recycling of aluminum cans, All of our breweries now around the country are landfill free. So we try to. I think my uncle made had a wonderful quote one time. He says anything that's thrown away is lost profit. So
yeah,
our attitude has always been, well, let's figure out something to do with waste materials. And so that includes everything from water to physical materials that we use in the process. And if we're able to recycle it, and sometimes we make money doing that.
You know, we're talking with Pete Coors. Pete, I'm thinking about the innovations that have come out of the Coors Brewing Company and how you guys have survived over the years. I don't expect you to remember this specific conversation, but in 1992, you and I were riding the Rockies, and we had just had a good day, and we had taken a little run, and we were sitting around and obviously having a couple cold beers, and you said that the times were challenging, 1992, and you were going to have to get bigger. You were going to have to expand somehow, because with a couple of the big boys and then a whole lot of the little guys going away, you didn't want to be stuck in the middle. And do you even recall that conversation?
Well, we were actually, at that time, we were already well on our way towards the expansion. We had been, until 1978, we were in 11 states.
Well, and Pete, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's actually what I was going to go back to. I was referring to, of course, as you became Molson Coors. But before that step, back in the 70s, talk about the decision to go nationwide, if you would.
Yeah, it was a difficult decision, but we had gone through a very stressful time with some labor difficulties in the mid to late 70s, and our major competitor Anheuser-Busch, but also Schlitz at the time and Miller Brewing Company took advantage of our weakness at that moment and began to put more pressure on we controlled the West. They began to come and say, well, that's the market that we can probably get some market share, and they did. So it became evident that we just weren't going to be able to stand still, and we would have to expand out throughout the rest of the country. And so that took until 1993 was the final expansion. And we also during the time became engaged with some global partners. So quite an exciting time in some ways and quite challenging in others.
In the late 70s, and I was, we're going to take another little break here, and we're talking with Pete Coors, but when we come back, I'm going to tell Pete about being at the coming out party for Coors Light. That had to be a difficult decision. Let's talk with Pete when we come back on The Restaurant Show. All right, let's keep talking this special hour of the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show. I'm telling you what, I am thrilled. I love Coors Banquet beer. That is my go-to. Coors Brewing Company, when you think of all the things they've done for Golden and for the Front Range and for the state and for the country, wonderful people. I've got Pete Coors with me talking about it. Pete, I'm going to say 1978, you're talking about deciding to expand from 11 markets. You're starting the process. But talk about, for a company that's probably, they're very proud of their tradition, as well they should be. I'm a tradition guy. Talk about the decision to say, you know what, these other guys, they're selling a light beer. Maybe we ought to get into the light beer business. Was it a little tough talking your dad and your uncle into going into a light beer with Coors Light? And I remember the coming out party was at the old Holiday Inn up in Frisco. And I was up there, and remember the cans. The cans looked like Banquet, but then they had Light on there. And there was some of that type of stuff. That had to be a tough decision to come up with a light beer.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories about it, actually. But basically, the bottom line, I was pretty much responsible at that time for sales and marketing, and my brother Jeff for all the technical parts of the brewery, R&D and operations. And one of his technicians, Chuck Hahn, came up with a new method of making light beer, actually different than what Miller had done or Anheuser-Busch. So we liked the taste, and my uncle was very very pleased with the way it tasted. And Jeff and I went to lunch, and I wrote down on a napkin. I said, "All right," and I put Coors, Budweiser, and Miller at the top, and I started with Bud, and I said, "Bud, Natural Light at that time,
off.
And
sorry, that just slipped out.
Michelob, all their brands. I went to Miller and Miller High Life and Miller Genuine Draft, and I went down to Miller, all their brands, and I got to the Coors column. I said, Coors. That's what we had.
Yeah.
I said, we cannot be all things to all people, and we were kind of stuck in the middle. And said, well, that's going to complicate our operation because we only had one brand in nine packages, and this was going to at least double. By the way, now we have 1,000 what we call SKU, store kept units. So it's much more complicated these days. But back then, it was a big transition.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt people, but people don't even think about different states with different requirements and different labels and different barcodes and all of that type of stuff. So it's not just saying, we're going to expand a little bit, or we're going to come up with a light. There's a little bit more to it than that.
Yeah, very much more complicated. And then we came out with the, as you say, we had the buff colored Coors Light can, and consumers were confused. They'd see it on the shelf and they think they were getting Banquet and they were getting Coors Light and vice versa. So
the silver bullet was born.
And my uncle said, well, you know, we had the can plant going at that time, and he said, why don't we just save the buff ink and just have a silver can. And then the silver bullet was born, and a huge success, and now actually 10 times bigger than Banquet.
Is it really? Wow. All right, so by the way, didn't Coors invent, not aluminum, but the aluminum can and pop tops and some other innovations?
Yeah, it was back in the 60s, Mike, and
right.
My uncle was looking for a way that he wanted a can that was, the old tin cans were three pieces. The body was rolled and seamed, and then a bottom put on and a top put on, back in the days of church keys and all that. And he wanted to, we were shipping an average case of beer was going 1,000 miles, and we needed a package that would be lighter weight and better quality. And We started off with using impact extrusion. It's just how they used to make toothpaste tubes. You take a piece of aluminum and you put it in a press, and it would jam a rod through it and squeeze out the aluminum. And we thought we could do that. Actually, did a line with that, and realized that that was 7-ounce cans. We could never scale up to 12-ounce cans, and so they invented called the drawn iron process, and the rest is history.
And don't I understand? Was it your uncle or your dad who came up with the pop top idea, or the push tops, those type of tops?
Yeah, we went through a period of the old press tab cans, and yeah. We thought we'd save 18% of the aluminum on a lid is associated with the opening device. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, we get rid of that, we'll have a deal where we can have a two buttons, one to release the pressure and the other one to push in and open give an opening for drinking out of.
How'd that work? Because they were kind of hard to push.
That was the problem. Some people thought they were not only hard to push, but, you know, if you're out, working in the yard or whatever, and your hands are dirty and greasy, and people didn't want to put their thumbs into the, the beer. I remember it was one of my first meetings of the board of directors, and they decided to have a vote of the board on whether we should keep press tab or go back to the stay-on tab, which is in use obviously now. And I was the only one that voted to go back to the stay-on tab. And my uncle looked at me and he said, well, it's unanimous except for you. We've never had a vote that wasn't unanimous on this board. He said, do you want to change your vote? And I said, no. He looked at me. He said, well, if we stay with the press tab, will you support it? And I said, absolutely, I'll do the best I can. So Next thing I knew, I was out in California doing a commercial on how to open the silly cans. And eventually the press tab went the way of all interesting innovations.
Of the buggy whip and so forth. You guys are very much into tradition. You talk about the can on the Coors Light, and listeners were bouncing around a little bit, but when something comes up, we might as well go to it. So you had Banquet, but I remember when you had Coors Light and the original became Coors Original. Talk about the name going to Banquet. I like Coors Banquet. I think it just had, I think Coors Original tells people, those of us that go back a long ways, and maybe you have a sentimental attachment to the Coors regular name, but I think that Banquet just kind of elevates it ever so slightly. Talk about that.
Well, people ask, you know, where did the word Banquet, why did it call it Banquet? And it actually goes back to the 40s.
Oh.
When my grandfather, and I don't know if he had salespeople, or he didn't really have much marketing in those days, but they came up with the idea that in those days, before you had fast food and you had all these restaurant options, the big deal was to go to a banquet. And so I said, well, let's just call it banquet beer because it would be special enough to be served at banquets.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where that originated. And then today, our banquet beer, we've got five breweries in the United States, but Golden is the only brewery that makes brews and ships Coors Banquet beer.
And when you had your merger with Molson and other mergers going down the line, wasn't that always a provision that Coors Banquet would always be made with Rocky Mountain spring water in Golden?
Well, I don't think we ever actually signed any agreements about that, but that's been my passion. And, you know, it's really interesting because over the years, marketing guys get a new marketing guy on a brand, and the first thing they want to do is change the label and change the name and the package. And so we went through, I don't know, probably a couple dozen different designs over the years, and Original became the name for a while, and then people were calling it Coors Regular. I used to say, there's nothing regular about it. It's very special.
Yeah.
So it's really our legend.
All right. So now that you're retired, you're emeritus, your son David is the vice chair. He's fine with all of that, right? He's fine with, we're going to brew it in Golden, and we're not changing this name. So whenever you get some new marketing geniuses, he's kind of got them. He's of the same sentiment. Is that correct?
Well, Dave is the finance marketing guy, and son Peter is in the process of, he's responsible for building and putting out Coors Banquet beer in our whole new brewery facility, which is a multi-million dollar project out in Golden. And so both of them are, they know the heritage of Coors Banquet, and I'm pretty sure they don't want anywhere.
Okay. All right. We're talking with Pete Coors. Pete, speaking of advertising, you guys went with some non-traditional advertising. Back when you first started really pushing the Coors Banquet, Coors Light, and so forth, and you were very involved in that. Hi, I'm Pete Coors, somewhere up in the Rockies. Remember that? Matter of fact, I remember it made you such a household face, such a household name, that you were telling me one time on a business trip that you were standing checking in at the hotel, and somebody said, aren't you? And and you got that a lot, to the point where you said, no, ma'am, that's somebody that looks just like me. You were getting that a lot. You just didn't feel like being Pete. You told me, I just didn't feel like being Pete Coors that day. Let's do this. And I remember your stories, even if you don't. And so we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some more with Pete, because I want to talk about craft beer. You know that Coors has the oldest, one of the oldest and largest craft beers in the country. We'll talk about that when we come back. All right, welcome back. We're talking with Pete Coors, this special edition of The Restaurant Show. I'm your host, Mike Boyle. Pete, Were you, because remember, we had Iacocca selling cars, and we had some of that. When who approached you and said, Pete, we think we need you to be in a pair of nice hiking boots and a nice leather jacket somewhere up in the Rockies with a stream in the background holding a can of Coors? How did that go down?
Well, it was actually an idea that was hatched by our advertising agency at the time, Foot, Cone, and Belding, FCB. And they asked me if I would do a couple of commercials. I'd done a couple because of about our water and stuff. They've been pretty one-offs. And I said, you know, I'm not sure I really want to be on the big stage and recognizable around the country. And I finally agreed to it. And we did them for about 15 years, Mike, and it was quite an interesting experience to go up in the mountains and in the wintertime and freeze. We had to do voiceovers because my lips got
What people don't understand is that to shoot a 1 minute commercial, a 30-second commercial, can sometimes take all day.
And that was before digital. I mean, they had to change the reels and all that stuff. It was a pretty interesting experience. But I did have people come up to me and say, "Are you Pete Coors?" And I said, "You know, a lot of people tell me that." I never deny it. It was a good experience, and I think. During that time, the Coors Light brand was growing dramatically, and I was glad to be able to be the pitch man. And but you know, all things run their course, and new marketing guys have better ideas. So now it's Chill is our big push for the Coors Light brand because we're selling refreshment basically.
Well, and I won't ask your opinion on this, but I would say to any marketing guys that want to think about a new pitch man or a new brand, a new can, a new design, something like that, there has been a recent case where a case study ought to be done, and you might advise them to be a little bit careful. I'm sure that you and everybody else listening knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, it was a wake-up call for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Another tradition, the stubby bottle. Banquet comes in a stubby bottle. And yeah, you've got the long necks, and yeah, you've got the cans, but the stubby bottle, I understand, goes all the way back. Does that go back to the 30s?
Yes, we originally had a stubby bottle, and then we had a kind of an elongated stubby, and then everybody was going to long necks. And I asked my uncle one time, it's kind of a funny story, I asked my uncle one time, why did we go to long necks? And he said, well, the cowboys would put their beers in their hip pockets when they go out dancing, and the beer would slosh out of the
stubbies.
Stubby bottles. And so they went to a long neck bottle. I'm not sure that it was kind of having a little light with the story, but... actually, son David was on the Coors Banquet brand in Chicago, and they decided that they wanted to go back to the stubby bottle. It's kind of part of our history and heritage. And I was kind of like the long neck bottle, but it's a huge success, and you know, it's just part of. I think consumers like heritage.
I do. I agree. I agree.
So it's been a really, really valuable tool for us.
And we do everything in this country to tear down history and our heritage and so forth. And I agree with you, Pete. I think that, you know, mainstream, flag-waving, country-loving Americans – I think they like the fact that you guys have been a success since 1873. You've weathered the challenges. I will tell you this. You talked about the Cowboys. I used to run the baseball team for the Cleveland Indians down in San Antonio, and we had a guy down there, Moncrief. He had the Falstaff distributorship down there, and he put together the other distributorships. This was before Coors was even in San Antonio, Texas. And one of them was – Lone Star. And their ad campaign was, "Long live the rodeo and longhorn steers, long live long necks and Lone Star beer." That was 45, 50 years ago, Pete, and I still remember it. Hey, listen, the hour's over, but Pete, can you stay for just a few more minutes? Because I do want to talk about Blue Moon and the idea of going into Blue Moon and the craft beer craze and how you've managed to expand even with the craft beer craze going on. Can you spend just a couple more minutes?
Absolutely.
All right. His name is Pete Coors. Yep, the former chairman and CEO of the Bolson Coors Beverage Company. Now, he may be retired, but he's still working, and he's still working now for free. All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap up this hour. We got more to talk about with Pete when we come back. I'm Mike Boyle, and this is The Restaurant Show. All right, let's get it on, and welcome back to another hour of The Restaurant Show. I'm your host, Mike Boyle. Love to have you join me every Saturday, 10 to 1 in Colorado Springs, every Saturday afternoon, 3 to 5 in Denver, every Sunday, 10 o'clock until noon with a simulcast all up and down the Front Range. We just got done talking with Pete Coors. You know what? I didn't get to cover everything I wanted. Pete's a longtime friend, dear, dear, wonderful, wonderful man, great family. We're going to have him back for a couple more segments, but I wanted to let you know that if you want to check out my upcoming events, you can go to my website, mikeboyle.com. I am in Cabo San Lucas right now. We flew down earlier this week with a group of listeners and flew United Airlines nonstop, got transferred down to the Riu Palace on the beach, and wonderful, wonderful all-inclusive property. You obviously have missed this winter getaway, but April 3rd to the 10th, I'm going to take a group of listeners to Cancun. We're going to fly nonstop into Cancun on United Airlines. We're going to be transferred over to the Riu Palace Kukulcan. It is where we stayed last September. And we generally don't go back to the same property, especially going back quite this quickly. But it's an adult-only property, and people loved it so, so, so much that we decided that we're going to go back, and a lot of people have already signed up for it. Yes, I am going to take – I did not for this trip, but for the trip in April, I will be taking baseball equipment with me. I've had a number of you contact me. I made some great contacts on the Yucatan Peninsula, and we've been able to start – we, that's you and me, the listeners, and we have been able to start baseball programs on the Yucatan Peninsula in some of these very poor villages. You know, if you're just trying to get through the day, if you're just trying to feed your family, if you don't make much money, maybe your house doesn't even have running water, maybe it doesn't have electricity in some of these villages, you really don't have money for baseball equipment. The kids go to school, then they go play baseball, and we are helping with that. So if you have any other baseball equipment, or if you'd like to give me cash, I go to Play It Again Sports in Castle Rock. Hillary over there does a great job of helping us out. So that's the trip coming up April 3rd to the 10th. It's on my website at mikeboyle.com. We have some other things coming up upon our return. Colorado Springs has some wonderful events. Those are on the calendar. Those are on the website. We also have on Wednesday the 24th, a restaurant show book club get together at the View House Restaurant in Centennial. And we have about generally 15, 16, 17 people. It's not a conventional book club because I get some authors to come. I get a lot of books in the mail. I put them out on the table and everybody leaves with one or two or three hardback books. So if you think you'd like to join us for that, go to my website, look it up, January 24th, and contact Lisa Fellow. She is the coordinator for that. So anyway, there's a couple of other things coming up. They're all on my website. But let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Pete Coors for a couple of more segments. Just a wonderful guy. You know what? And the Coors Brewing Company is a very iconic company, 150 years So I think you're going to find, if you listen to the first hour, it'll be on podcast. I'm also going to turn my whole segment with Pete Coors into a podcast. But let's come back with Pete on the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show. All right, welcome back to the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show, where we talk about restaurants, travel, movies, books, sports, whatever we feel like talking about. And I feel like talking about Pete Coors and beer. I feel like talking about beer. Pete, did you see the craft beer? We talked about a lot of different stuff, but did you see the craft beer craze coming? I've got two stories. First of all, I understand that Blue Moon, which started in about 1995 when Coors Field was built, is that correct? And is it the largest craft beer in the country?
Yes, on both accounts.
Okay.
I think we saw the craft beer craze coming, but we didn't really know how to deal with it. And it was really interesting.
Probably not the magnitude.
The guys at the our brewers at the Sandlot Brewery at Coors Field came up with Blue Moon, which is a Belgian white beer, and we've got some unbelievably good brewers working for the company and have been to this day. And they came up with this, and I kind of liked it, but, this is going to be a hard sell. It's a cloudy beer.
I like to see the bubbles.
And I said, nobody's gonna put a put an orange slice as a garnish on beer. And so we put it in the marketplace, and sales were pretty small, and we're a big brewer, so brewing something that's less than about 10,000 barrels a year is just almost impossible for us, because you end up sending too much beer down the sewer. And
you're reminding me of another story. Go ahead.
So I tried to kill it, and they said, "No, this is going to work. This is going to work." And so they asked me to go out. They were testing it in Boston, and I went to Boston and went to the bar, and they had a Blue Moon, but they put a lime slice in. I said, "Look, you guys have got this. There's no way we could put lemon in beer." So, and I said, "This is not going to work." I said, "No, believe me, it's going to work." So what happened basically is that people would see somebody drinking it in the bar, and they'd look down the bar and say, "What's that?" And the bartender would say, "Well, that's a new beer. It's called Blue Moon. It's refreshing. It's different." And they order one, and they liked it. And pretty soon what happened is that we didn't sell it nationally, and the advertising was very small. And distributors started asking for it. And once that happened, it just kind of took off. So it was a 20-year overnight success.
I did say this, I interrupted, but one of the things that I love about an ice-cold Coors Banquet is when you look at it, it looks refreshing because you see the bubbles. And I've had Blue Moon. I like it, but I'm not big on cloudy beers. I will ask you this, and remember you're on radio. It's a very popular show. I have never put an orange in my Blue Moon. Have you?
Oh, it is almost always.
Really? That's the way you need to drink it, right? Okay, well.
It's a very special orange. It's a Valencia orange, though. But it's, I think part of it's ritualistic. It's, as I say, it's kind of a refresh. It's one of the first really different, refreshing beers. And it's a precursor to seltzers and some of the other varieties that have come along, and it's been a huge success, and we're thrilled that we were able to drive that as the number one craft beer in the world.
I haven't adversely affected our friendship by saying I'm not drinking it with an orange, have I?
You can drink it any way you want, Mike.
All right, so
just don't put an orange in your banquet.
No. All right, so Pete, the beer craze. And there's a couple stories that you reminded me of. One of them, Cal Poly. you know, a lot of college campuses, listeners, they pride themselves, we're an alcohol-free campus. Yeah, well, I got some news for you. You go through the dorms, you are not an alcohol-free campus. Now, you you may not advocate for it, and you may not have it on campus, but Cal Poly, they've got their own market, they've got their own winery, and they've got beer that they work with. So a couple years ago, a few years ago, the president, he said, you know Pete Coors reasonably well, don't you? I said, yeah, very good. I consider him a friend. He said, could you get him to come out and speak to our hospitality college and a beer class? And so the place was absolutely packed. And one young lady stood up and said, you know, my boyfriend makes a pretty good craft beer, and he made about 80 gallons last year. Do you think that this is something that Coors might have interest in? And I'll never forget your answer. You said, young lady, I don't mean to be rude here, but we probably spill 80 gallons a day. So probably not. When it gets a little bit bigger, give me a call back. Which brings me to you and the other two that I don't mention are the big boys. And if you can generate, and a lot of this came out during the latest Bud fiasco, if you can generate a 0.5%, a 1%, 1.5% increase year to date in sales, don't I remember you telling me that that's huge?
Yeah, volume is very important, but also pricing. I mean, pricing is actually has a bigger effect on us financially than a 1% increase in volume. Increase in volume is great as long as you have the capacity. And back in the 60s, when we were growing at 10% a year, our biggest challenge was building capacity. Now we've got the capacity and we have the ability to add. Obviously, it helps because it spreads out your overhead. It spreads out your labor costs.
Hey, Pete, I'm sorry. I'm coming up on a break. Hold that thought for just a second, and then we'll get back to it, okay?
Good.
All right, talking with Pete Coors on the Mike Boyle Restaurant Show.